Hey, this is Joe's sister, Nikki. I think I might be the only girl in the world who has a brother who spends his entire day in the basement pretending he has an internet radio show. Jeez.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey, money fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and if this is your first time here, welcome to a podcast about a man who helps out his neighbor lady by doing all of the announcing for her Deadbeat Kids podcast. This particular announcer guy is a humble, lovable, handsome, worldly, frighteningly intelligent character, as you'll see throughout today's show. Speaking of, on today's episode, we welcome from Ameriprise Investments, Marcy Keckler. But that's not all. With another report from the intersection of investing and social media, Buzz Index's Jamie Wise. And as usual, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Sasha, who asks about college planning, and then we'll get to the only reason you're actually listening to this show, the dulcet tones of my voice as I bring you today's trivia. And here they are, the same men who are the butt of the old two guys walk up to a microphone joke, Joe and O-J-J-J-G.
I don't know that joke.
Two guys walk into... Anyway, yep.
And if I did know it, it totally wouldn't be funny. It would be serious and amazing. Because you know what? You've made it. You're here at the Stacking Benjamin Show for another Wednesday. How's your Wednesday so far there, Mr. OG or other guy?
Original gangster is the correct pronunciation of that, but it's a good Wednesday. It's a week that's blowing by. It just kind of seems like boom, all of a sudden it was Wednesday.
Just bam. You know what else just blows by is your trip to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, because you'll be in and out of there so fast with exactly the right checking account, savings account, and debt products that you need to do better with your money. Be do better with your money. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. I'll tell you what, every once in a while, we go and we look at what interest rates look like at Magnify Money. You want to do that right now? Let's do that.
And, yeah, we can do it.
And we're taping this a few days early, but check out how easy this is. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. I hit the link. It takes me right to Magnify Money. I hover over compare the best offers for, and I'm going to go to savings accounts and bam, hit get personalized offers. There they are. The top rate when we recorded this, and this is just slightly early, 1.25% from Pierpoint Financial. It says there's lots of fine print. Minimum balance is $10,000, OG. So you got to put quite a bit.
Okay, so you got to have some cash.
Yeah, put quite a bit there. But 1.25, that's higher than we've seen. If you have only $100, Salem 5 Direct, 1.1%. By the way, once again, these could all be different when you get there. Minimum of $100 balance, and it's a little complex. But see how easy that was?
Super simple.
StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. And it's not just, we just looked at savings accounts, but you know, checking accounts, personal loans, student loan refinance options, reward credit cards, best credit cards overall. It's all right there. Speaking of student loans, by the way, you know, the number one place that Magnify Money calls number one when it comes to student loan refinancing and personal loans, that's SoFi. We'll give you a shortcut there. Head to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. They're going to throw in $100 if you refinance using our link, and you'll find that they've got tons of options to serve you, OG, like flexible loan terms, extremely competitive interest rates. Better yet, they work with members, not just customers. And people who do business with SoFi know they're a different kind of company. You know how this whole thing works where they're a marketplace lender? What that means is there's people looking for a higher interest rate on their money. They hand it to SoFi. SoFi does due diligence on you and they loan it to you. So on one end, you got people looking for a better interest rate than the abysmal stuff that we just shared with you. And on the other side, you're looking for a lower interest rate. Everybody's happy when you head to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. And I love getting the compliments we've gotten lately about our friends over at SoFi. And by the way, we can announce now, we're going to talk about here in the new future, we're going to have a webinar You'll hear about these first over at the Green Room, which is our closed Facebook group, stackybenjamins.com/greenroom, to give you the link because it's a big, ugly link. But that'll give you the link to our Facebook group, and we always announce stuff there first. But that's going to be coming up here in just a couple weeks. When to refinance your student loans and when not to refinance your student loans. And
that's half the battle right there.
Yeah, that can be the key, because you and I both see people refinance their student loans when they totally, totally shouldn't be doing it.
Got to be smart about that too.
One thing you should be smart about, I am just Mr. Segway. I am on fire. That doesn't happen very often, so I got to draw attention to it. See how I'm on fire? Shine the spotlight right here, baby. Marcy Koeckler from Ameriprise is coming down to the basement, because the one thing you have to be smart about to finish off the Segway, I start bragging about it, I don't even finish it, is communication. If you're planning with anybody, whether it's parents, kids, partners, spouses, whatever, you have to communicate. And even in your job, if you're not good at communication, you can be fantastic at the technical stuff, but study after study shows it's communication in most jobs for the win. We're going to talk about family communication, how to get that done with Marcy Koeckler at Ameriprise Investments. But first, we got some phenomenal headlines, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
This one comes to us from the tech portion of Fortune. And this is written by Jeff John Roberts. You're going to love this one, OG. It's going to prove you can't be too safe when you're giving out your information. You think you're doing the safe thing? Check this out. Two U.S. tech companies wired $100 million, $100 million bucks to a scammer.
Isn't that awesome? To see somebody else do that, you know? Into such great volume, nevertheless, right?
Department of Justice, a couple of weeks ago, reported the arrest of a Lithuanian man who allegedly conned employees at two U.S. tech firms into making $100 million in bank transfers to a phony supplier.
Hey, you got to pay your bills, Apple.
According to this, the agency said 48-year-old Avaldad Ramaskakis.
Yep, I'm sure that's exactly how you say that.
I'll bet it's not. Used email to impersonate a real Asian supplier and trick them into wiring money to a bank account that he controlled. And to make it more convincing, he used forged invoices that appeared to be from the tech company executives, created fake corporate stamps with the company's names. They did not name the two companies, but instead described one as a, quote, multinational technology company specializing in internet-related services and products, and the other as, quote, a multinational corporation providing online social media and networking services. It goes on later on to say there are few U.S. tech companies that match both the descriptions above and that regularly make bank transfers worth tens of millions to Asian suppliers, but none have publicly acknowledged being victim of such a scam, which allegedly occurred between 2013 and 2015. You can't be safe enough, OG. I mean, check this out. If U.S. tech companies are getting caught and they're the ones that work with this every day, what's the chance you're going to get caught in this stuff?
Reminds me of the story that I read about a entrepreneur couple. I don't know if it was husband and wife or what, but they were fulfilling a order to the U.S. government for something, whatever it was, some widgets, and they sent out the invoice and the government paid them. And they sent out another invoice and the government paid them. Every time they did an order, the government paid them right away. And then on one of the orders, they mistyped it and put an extra zero and the government paid it.
I saw an episode of American Greed on CNBC about this.
It must have been the same thing, right? So they kept on doing it. They're like, well, okay, cool.
And they finally just had a typo.
Yeah. And so they got to the point where they were sending $1 million invoices and the government would pay it. And then they got too lazy to send out the fake invoices. So they photocopied the invoice and sent it. And the computer caught it. And the computer said, we already paid this purchase order, right? Ding. And then looked at it and went, why are we spending $18 million for paperclips?
I think as part of that case, and this might not be the same case, obviously I've done zero homework because I didn't know you were going to bring this up, but I think that it was two sisters and one of the sisters committed suicide after that.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But then the other one is her defense said it was all the sister that committed suicide.
Yes, it sure was.
She had nothing to do with it.
piss all over her grave.
Absolutely. It was her.
It was her. She did it. I mean, look, she's the one that like threw herself off of a bridge, not me.
Well, let's make this a little bit worthwhile for people. Remember, when you're shopping online, always have that lock, right? You always want to look up at the URL where you put the address in, and there should be a lock. And if there's no lock there, do not shop there.
No,
don't answer emails directly. Cheryl has brought this stuff to me. She's like, oh, look, there's this thing that like UPS has this thing for us and we got to click that. I'm like, don't click that link. Do not go.
And a lot of times you can just hover your mouse over the link too. And it will, you know, depending on what browser you have, it might kind of pop up where that link is. If it's a letter from FedEx and they email you and say, we've got something for you. And then the link takes you to, you know, some other kind of place that's not, it doesn't say www.fedex.com/whatever. It ain't a link from FedEx.
Right. It takes
you to Chase or American Express or wherever, right?
Takes you to joesmomsneighbordog.com.
Yeah, right. That's a website you only go to one time in your life.
Because he's drained the bank account then. And he's made sure you got all kinds of phishing spyware on your computer after that. Big lessons. And also passwords. Now with all these solutions where you can change your password. And by the way, none of this, the way that a lot of these scams happen now, OG, none of this still completely protects you. But at the very least, you got to take the minimum precautions.
Agreed.
And for our second headline today, we're joined by our, what do we call him? Our social media investing expert, Jamie Wise from the Buzz Index joins us. Is that what we're going to call you?
It works for me, I guess. I haven't given too much time thinking about my title, but if you want to put me in that category, happy to be there.
I know. We have to figure out what to put on your name tag when you come down to the basement, you know?
How about just Jamie?
that's right. It's the Jamie, the professional Jamie. Well, you and I, we should tell everybody, give people a little look behind the curtain because you are out of town next week at the end of the month. I'm out of town the first week of the new month. So we're talking a little early, so we don't have the March numbers yet. But generally, so far, we're taping this on March 24th. So far, that negativity that you saw from the buzz online, it still persists, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in the market, right? We're seeing weakness in the market. We're seeing rallies being sold. And we're seeing some of that reflected in what we're monitoring in online conversations where people are getting more cautious. We saw that in the last couple of months in the financial sector. And now we're seeing people starting to reallocate in their portfolio the same way, going a little bit more defensive.
Well, let's talk about one of those names that left. Tesla. Is that completely out of the index?
It is completely out of the index now. And what a name this one is to follow in our index. It's right. In, it's out. And of course, the stock is moving all over the place. I think just the abundance of news that we've seen around Tesla in the last month has had people just getting a little more cautious on the company. There's management departures. There's really big equity offerings and secondary market offerings, debt, raising debt to be able to fund all of their really grandiose growth initiatives, to fund the Model 3, to fund the Model X updates. You know, I think people are just hearing too much almost, that it's making them think about, wait a second, there is a long trajectory to this name and time to take a pause.
I don't think though, Jamie, that Tesla's out of your index for good. It seems like not only do they get a lot of discussions online, I see Tesla discussions all the time, but it ping-pongs a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. It's really one of those polarizing names, right? And that's what the exciting thing is about listening to a broad amount of conversation. Because when you talk to any one person individually, they have a polarizing view on Tesla as an investment. I think by and large, people like the brand, the cars are really cool, right? They do as advertised, but the stock is just so expensive. So from an investment perspective, it is polarizing. And you shouldn't listen to any one expert to get the consensus view. You really need that broad audience to understand it.
Well, let's talk about a brand that I don't see nearly as cool. I use them, even though I always think that I shouldn't. Verizon is in the news. Verizon, if you want to sponsor the show, I promise I'll stop ripping you. But Verizon's in right now.
What a classic story of a brand that people just don't love. And it's that whole space, right? You get that monthly bill and it drives you nuts. But from an investment perspective, it's pretty rock solid, right? It's a defensive name. And even though last month they actually had earnings that were below market expectations, the stock dropped about 5% on those earnings. And then the conversation online from an investment perspective turned the other way. Now with that stock going on sale, if you would, you know, people like the dividend yield. It's a steady stock. People still need Verizon's communication. And sure enough, after that, the company came back and not only announced that they would be continuing their strategy of increasing dividends year over year, which they've done for years and years now, but they're also bringing back the buyback. And that's going to help support the stock going forward. People like that.
Yeah. When you see that, people fleeing toward the dividend paying stocks, that once again, it, you know, you want to stay in equities because you don't want to just fold. But where do you run? You run to high dividends.
Yeah. And when a company like Verizon is paying a 4.5% dividend yield and you compare that to what you can get in the fixed income markets, it's an easy choice.
But even though the financial names, a lot of them have been stripped out of the index after really fueling the run up at the end of last year and early this year, Jamie, the technology stocks have not. Those are still seem to be on fire and a big part of what's in the buzz.
Yeah, the sentiment around those stocks is not changing. People are still really positive on the prospects for technology, how it's going to impact us moving forward, and how the companies that are at the leading edge of that technological innovation are going to benefit from it and their stock prices will benefit from it. So, you know, we're really focused in on the chip makers here, where we've had AMD and NVIDIA as a part of our portfolio for a while, which has really fueled a lot of the growth in the index. But most recently, in the latest rebalance, we had Micron, you know, really moving up the ranks and going to a near full weight in our index. And sure enough, last night they report earnings. The stock is up 8% as we're talking. It was up as high as 10% this morning. So I think people really are on the right path, understanding the value that these companies can bring to their shareholders over time.
And sure enough, historically, during market downturns, technology tends to go where it's going to go. I mean, unless you're talking about people just stopping buying computers, if it gets really bad, technology will go down. But a lot of time you can avoid that with some of these mid-cap and small-cap tech stocks.
Yeah. And you know what? The beta on these stocks is actually going lower, right? Because people view them as stable long-term investments. And where, you know, Google or Apple might have been a high beta name, or we still instinctively think of them as high beta names, investors don't. They recognize that these are very large companies now with multiple avenues to be able to generate future growth. And the stock trading reflects that. They just don't swing as much as you used to. People are positive. There's a solid source of demand behind them.
It's interesting. I can't wait to see what happens in the next month. I hope that the buzz isn't right. You know, we all fear that it is, that finally the market's gonna finally really, well, and it started coming down, as you very well know, but I hope we don't see a lot more of that. I hope next time we talk to you, the market's up, what, 15%?
Yeah, and even if it's not, if you have to be invested in equities and you don't want to try and time things, you want to make sure you're invested in those stocks that has the best demand characteristics behind them. So at least you can cushion some of the blow.
And for more information on the Buzz Index, it's stackybenjamins.com/BUZZ. And we should talk about this for a second. There's the exchange traded fund, and that's just slightly different than the index. You've got the index, but you can buy the index as an exchange traded fund, ticker symbol BUZ.
You got it. NYSE ARCA listed.
Awesome. By the way, I also need to tell people this disclosure that I own shares in the Buzz Index. I've been a happy investor. Doesn't mean that it's for everybody out there, but I will disclose that I own shares in the index. Jamie Wise, thanks for hanging out, man.
Great to be here again, Joe. Have a great trip.
Big thanks to Jamie Wise again for coming down to the basement. Do you agree with me? Tesla's going to be back in the Buzz Index.
Generally not, but about what?
Well, the Tesla is going to be in the Buzz Index, out of the Buzz Index, in the Buzz Index, out of it. It's just going to be a ping pong ball with that company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, big stuff. And Verizon being back in. I get it. I get the dividend. I get that it's consistent. Still, I use that brand and I'm not the world's biggest fan. But I don't think that's the lesson of the piece. I think I think the big lesson we got out of today, going back to the first headline, use a little common sense, sorting through your email and doing your password planning. And the number two lesson, as the market continues to rotate towards safer stuff, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 30 days till we talk to Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes again. You know, G, we talk a lot about budgets, asset allocation, tax planning, but you and I both know that the single most important factor, whether you're successful in most businesses and in your personal planning, is how you communicate. Mm-hmm. And whether you're communicating with parents, partners, kids, the best plans have to be outlined and implemented. If more than one person's involved, you know what that means? It means that it has to be communicated. Well, Marcy Keckler is the Vice President of Financial Strategy at Ameriprise Financial, which is, you know, is my old stomping grounds. and she joins us in the basement to talk about Ameriprise's research on communication and planning. So let's say hello to Marcy Keckler coming down to the basement. And Marcy Keckler, VP of Financial Strategy at Ameriprise Financial, joins us on the shortwave. How are you, Marcy? Glad you could join us.
I'm great, Joe. So glad to be here.
Well, and I'm glad because Ameriprise, my old stomping grounds, is it still just freezing this time of year in Minneapolis?
No, the spring is coming. The spring is coming. We can see it. We have our fingers crossed for the next wonderful season.
You say that all winter long, don't you, Marcy?
We do. It's a chant and it keeps us going.
Right. Well, let's talk financial strategy because obviously financial strategy at Ameriprise Financial, I think of financial strategies. And of course, I think of investment strategies. I think of asset allocation. I think about complex estate planning. But what you and I are going to talk about is a whole different type of strategy, communication, much more of a soft skill, huh?
Absolutely. And what we know is that all the things you talked about, investing and estate planning, they are critical in people's financial lives. But people have financial lives to fuel all the other parts of their life, their relationships, their dreams, and their goals. And so we know having those things really work together, your money and your life, is what's really important. And a big part of that is how you communicate about money with the people in your life who you love and who you care about.
We hear these horrible statistics that people are divorced, of course, because of money disputes being one of the biggest problems that couples have. Where do you start the money talk with a spouse or with a significant other, Marcy? How does that begin?
Well, I think the first thing to know is that if you and your significant other or spouse have disagreements about money, you should know you're in good company. We did recent research on couples and money, and we learned it's pretty common for couples to have disagreements about money. And in fact, 8 out of 10 said, yeah, it's something that they do disagree about. And for those who do, it can be as often as once a month. So, you know, you're not alone if that's what you're doing. But the good news is the majority of those couples also told us they're able to work through it. Having good conversations leads to much greater financial harmony in relationships. So I think if you're having disagreements, know you're in good company, but keep talking because that makes a huge difference in terms of how couples can be in sync regarding their money.
Are these casual chats, Marcy, or are these, let's schedule time together once a week or once a month to have a real sit down?
We really recommend that people do schedule time and make a point of having a conversation about money. And if that's not something you've been doing in your relationship, it can be awkward. It can be like, well, how do we start this? I think, though, people do need to make time, whether that's sitting around the kitchen table or you're taking a walk together or even you're going out for a nice dinner. And that's going to be one of your areas of discussion. It's important to take time for it and to do it regularly. Another thing that we know from research is that when couples work with a financial professional, that can really help foster a more harmonious financial relationship. They can have kind of an objective third party who can make sure they have conversations about areas of disagreement, and that can really help bridge gaps. So for couples who haven't been working with any sort of a financial professional, that might be something they'd want to consider because it really can help you come together.
It's funny you say that because I just remember, Marcy, meeting with couples, and I really felt like sometimes these were the only times that they talked about money, and the fact that we would schedule meetings a couple times a year at least with them, it was great to sit down. But I also had the feeling that wasn't enough. Like they needed to have many, many more conversations than they were having just with me.
I think you're right, but I do think that's a good start. Even if you are sitting down formally with somebody a couple times a year, as you did when you were a financial advisor, you know, it really does mean people make time as a couple to talk about what's important to them and both financially and in their lives and how they can make sure their financial decisions are in alignment with their values. But doing it beyond just with a financial advisor is important. And I'd recommend that people think about conversations around day-to-day finances because that is really important. Like, are you in charge of paying the utility bills? Am I doing that? Some couples decide they want to rotate that responsibility. Other people in their, you know, relationship decide to specialize. So I think there's day-to-day finances, but really important are those longer term, setting goals together, making sure you're working toward the same ends and that you have a kind of common vision of your future. And then you've also talked about what might go wrong. I think when couples have conversations about finances, it's important to talk about things like, well, what happens if somebody winds up having a medical issue and they can't work for a while? How will we handle that? What would it mean? What would we want to do to protect ourselves? So having a wide range of topics covered really improves couples' financial harmony.
Those were always the best discussions I felt when we had this discussion of what the strategy would be if the train came off the rails, because then I felt like my clients and I always had, you know, we had contingencies and things didn't seem to surprise us. Like we knew that we had the emergency fund in place, or we knew where we pull cash from if we needed it. I wanted to ask you something though, Marcy, about lots of families. You know that in a lot of families, one person seems to know all the numbers. And in some cases, like before I would meet with people, the other person's in a place I call fantasy land, right? Everything's going to be fine if I don't look at it. If I'm the person that knows the numbers and I want to bring the person in fantasy land to the table, are there ways that I shouldn't try to bring the person to the table?
Yeah, I think there are techniques that you'd want to avoid. Things that are going to feel like blaming or making somebody feel like they are not an equal partner. Those are strategies to avoid.
Yeah.
Things that make sense are to, you know, really position the conversation from a position of caring. I care about you. I care about our future together. And I'm concerned that we haven't talked about X, whatever the topic is, or I'd like to make sure we have united front on this important topic. And I'm not sure we do. I think those are ways that people can broach a conversation with somebody who maybe is a couple steps removed from the details to bring them in and make it feel like really more of a genuine partnership. It is natural to divide and conquer. We know that that's really how people can make things work in their relationships and in their family lives, especially if they have children. But I do think it's really critical that if there's someone who's more primary on point regarding finances in the household, that the other person is involved and aware. It is important that they know where all the accounts are. They know a general sense of, you know, how the money is moving around, how your incomes are flowing in, how you're paying expenses, how you're saving and investing, who are the financial professionals that are engaged, and how to contact them and also get online access to all the accounts. It's really important that that be mutually shared information.
It's funny when you say where all the accounts are, I want to shift our focus for a second away from couples to people and older relatives, like older parents. Marcy, if you don't know what's going on with your older or aging parents' money, how do you begin that discussion if you're the person who's going to maybe be in charge of the estate later?
We did recent research to ask how are families talking about money together to get at just what you're asking about, Joe. How do families talk across generations? And one thing that we learned is that the adult children are often hesitant to bring up the topic because they feel like it's not really their place.
Right.
They have
right.
some concern about that. And they, you know, so they're a little hesitant. Sometimes the parents don't bring it up because they may not have even taken time to sit down and think it through and, you know, think about their intentions. Or they may have a feeling like, well, I'm not sure that's really the business of my adult child. But what we know is when families do have those conversations, they reported in our research that they felt much better. So they said, I'm afraid it might be awkward or uncomfortable if they hadn't had the conversation. But those who had said, actually, it wasn't awkward. It went well, and everybody felt better afterwards. There was a strong correlation in our research between families who communicated and families who felt confident about their financial future. So what we would say, based on the research with 2,700 people, about how they talk about money in their family, the more you communicate, the better you'll feel.
It seems like, though, Marcy, you got to tiptoe into that discussion.
Right. And here's one of the lessons I think people can learn. 9 out of 10 of the adult children who we talked to said the trigger for having had that conversation, if they had had it with their parents, was some sort of a life-changing event.
Oh.
Whether that was a change in medical situation that required a need for extended care at home or maybe in a nursing home or even a death in the family. And so I think that's one of the key things is you will feel better if you start early. And I tell families, think about it as this is a gift that you are giving. By handling it early, you will reduce the stress and strain on family members in those times of transition that are sure to come. And so if you can tackle it sooner, you can take the financial stress out of a future time that's going to likely have plenty of stress from other important sources anyway. I do think one way for people to think about broaching these conversations with either their parents or their adult children can be to consider having a financial professional involved to to facilitate that conversation. The research we did, 59% of the baby boomers who we talked to had a financial professional who was engaged. Those who did said about a quarter of them told us they were working with the same financial professional across generations. So either they were working with the same financial professional as their adult children, or they're a financial professional they had recommended to their adult children. So having a sort of somebody who understands that situation broadly across generations can facilitate a conversation. Now, sometimes that's not practical. Logistically, you've got, you know, parents living in one city, you know, they've got two or three adult kids in three other cities, and they may say it's not practical that we're all really in the same room. And that's understandable. But I think one technique that they can use is to say, hey, my financial advisor, my financial professional asked me these questions, and I realized, mom and dad, we'd never talked about this. Or daughter and son, I realized we'd never talked about this. I wanted to do that. Using that as a catalyst can make it a little more natural for people.
I was going to say too, more and more technology is getting rid of a lot of those barriers. I mean, we're not all talking on my dad's shortwave like we are today. You could use Skype or use some of these crazy tools that are out there to get everybody virtually in the same room.
Absolutely. And we know virtual meetings are something a lot of us do in our professional lives. And certainly you can do that with a financial professional and with your family members. I've done it with my own siblings. I have three siblings living in three different states, different than mine. So the four of us are in four different spots. We've actually had conference calls among us where we said, hey, we need to talk. And in fact, we've done that about our own parent situation. So I think you certainly can bring technology beyond the ever reliable shortwave to bear in those conversations that can really help bring people together. And another key finding that I think is really important for people is that having those conversations early and regularly is going to help you feel better, but getting to the right level of detail is important. And you mentioned this earlier, Joe, but if you have done all the work of putting together an estate plan, you know, you've gotten a will, maybe hopefully powers of attorney as well, that specify who you want to make decisions about your finances if you're not able to, who you want to make decisions, really importantly, about your health care and medical care if you're not able to, and, you know, potentially trust or other arrangements. If that's all nailed down, great, congratulations, good for you. It's really important your family know where those documents are, because in a time of need, you don't want people scrambling to find them. And that's a really critical detail for people to share with their loved ones.
You beat me to it, because that was going to be my next question. But an offshoot of that, how much about the estate plan should I share with them? I mean, if I feel comfortable, should my children who are going to be in charge, should we maybe have a meeting about that as soon as possible?
Absolutely. The more you feel comfortable sharing, the more you should share. But we do know there can be hesitance. And right. I think one of the recommendations I have, if somebody, say, is planning to leave an inheritance, we know actually that a lot of people are. Our recent research on families and money said 4 out of 5 people said they were planning to leave some sort of an inheritance. And the most common by far people they intended to leave something to were children or grandchildren. But only 1 out of 5 have told them how much to expect. And that leads to a huge potential for misaligned expectations. In fact, in our research, people who told us they were expecting to get an inheritance, they thought it was going to be $100,000 or more. People who'd already gotten one reported the majority that it was less than $100,000. So if you're not comfortable sharing an exact number, or maybe you don't even know it yet, you're going to wait and see, it's going to be what's left after you do this or do that in your retirement years. I think one thing that is really smart is to give people some frame of reference for what to expect. So if you have an adult child, you might want to make sure they understand if the inheritance amount is something that might allow them to pay for their own children's college education, or it's more like, hey, it might be a down payment on a car or a down payment on a house. Helping people get some frame of reference of approximate magnitude can help them, frankly, plan for it in their own goal planning and in their own financial planning in their lives.
I can see why that's such a tough thing to cover. I can't imagine having that discussion. Let's go the other route. Our children, my kids are 21, graduating from college, hopefully very, very soon. Marcy, when do we start bringing our own children into the financial discussions?
Well, I think it's a great question. And, you know, of course, people who are raising children or who have raised children have dealt with questions around, well, when do I even start giving them an allowance and how much allowance? And is it tied to chores? Is it tied to grades? Is it just
right?
Just using money? So, you know, it starts young but as people get into their early 20s is when our research says parents start being more comfortable talking about more of the details around things like estate planning and inheritance. Typically, prior to the, you know, early to mid-20s, young adult stage, they're not getting into as much detail. But we do know it's important that families talk to their kids across ages about money so that they can help them grow and develop good skills and good perspective. I think, for example, when kids are first getting a, you know, their first job or their first earning money and then spending their own money is when they can begin to understand the value of a dollar and that work, you know, is tied to having money. That is a time when it, I think, becomes helpful, for example, for a teenager to understand how much does a car cost? How much does a college education cost? Until they've earned and handled money, it can be a big abstract number. But once they've realized, you know, how many hours they have to mow lawns or work at a coffee shop to come up with their latest trip to the mall, I think it is when people start to get a better sense of money.
Marcy, where do we go if we want to get more information? I know you've referenced research that you guys have done, or somebody wants to talk more to an Ameriprise financial advisor, maybe. Where do people go for more info?
Yeah, our website is Ameriprise.com. And on that website, if you go Ameriprise.com/family wealth is where you can find much more research about how families talk about money and some great ideas and tips that families can use to foster those conversations in their own families.
Excellent. And you know what? If you're out walking the dog or on the morning run or on your way to or from work, I'll have the link to that in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Marcy, thanks for hanging out for a few minutes today. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks, Joe.
Hey there, money fans. I'm podcast trivia guru, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. In honor of Marcy Keckler coming down to the basement, I'm dishing out some Ameriprise-related trivia. How about this one? What huge company spun off Ameriprise back in 2005? I'll be back with the answer after the break.
Hey, Stackers, know what I love? I love saving money on things that aren't important. I'm not one of these people that wants to live in a cabin in the woods. Don't get me wrong, that's your goal, that's fine, but that's not something that I'm looking for. I'm looking to spend money on experiences that are fun and not spend money on stuff that I don't care about. You know one thing I don't care about? I'm not attached to my bank. So why do people stick with the same bank forever when banking has completely changed? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money and you'll find out how much. You'll find out how badly your checking accounts performed. You'll find out how horrible that savings account you have is. You'll also find out that the debt products you're using are a big fat waste of time. So if you're going to consolidate your loans, why not do it the best way possible? If you're going to bank with anybody, why not make them the best possible? StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. And if you pay your bills on time and you want to unbank, I love the hashtag don't bank. SoFi is not only best in class there, but guess what else they're doing? They're offering you $100 over a short amount of time. Not sure when this deal's going to end, but they're offering $100 if you use our link, stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. Whether it's for your mortgage, for your student loans, or personal loans, if you're refinancing and looking for a super low rate and you're somebody with a great history of paying your bills on time, you know who you are. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. Don't have to earn a lot of money, but you have to be somebody that's responsible with the money that you do have.
Welcome back, money fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And before the break, I asked the question, what company spun off Ameriprise? Here's a hint. Joe occasionally brings up his time working with this company. The answer? American Express. In 2005, the company spun off their subsidiary, American Express Financial Advisors, which then became known as Ameriprise. Maybe I should get my trivia segment spun off to its own podcast, Trivia Time with Doug. Hey, I like the ring of that. Time to get my own sponsors. See ya.
Who do you think would sponsor Trivia?
Good luck.
Trivia Time with Doug.
Right.
Maybe a tequila company.
Yeah.
That might do it. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they're disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on what you value most, your family and your time. It's why they created a high-quality, affordable term life insurance policy. Did my voice just crack? I think puberty's hitting me again at 49, OG. It's why they created a high-quality, affordable term life insurance policy you can purchase entirely online. Can't believe that did that. And qualified, healthy applicants can even skip the medical exam. And I love that. I shouldn't make fun of that because I love the fact that you can skip the medical exam if you're healthy, qualified, get that done. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get your free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. And the best part I like, even if you are just headed there to see what it's all about, mosey on over to the area where they talk about how much insurance to have. Because what I love, OG, is they don't give you a number. They give you a range. At the minimum, you probably want to have this. But there's also this, because as you know, insurance can be an emotional decision. You got to take a lot of factors into account.
Yep.
If you get the minimum amount of life insurance, a lot of those numbers, when I used to do those for people, those numbers blow in the wind. I mean, it's a bunch of what would you do? And you and I both know, nobody knows. You don't know what you'd do. Your spouse passes away. Do you have any idea what you'd really do? I shouldn't ask that question.
I don't know whether or not to be funny at this moment or serious. You got my tongue-tied.
Well, thank God you didn't go for the funny one. because maybe Mrs. OG wouldn't think it was that funny. But let's say hello to our new friend, Sasha, who we're throwing off the Haven Lifeline too. Say hello, Sasha.
Hi, Joe and OG. This is Sasha from Minnesota. I have a question about saving for your kids' college. A little background. My husband and I are in our early 40s. We both work. We have no debt besides our house. We each have well-funded 401ks and Roth IRAs. And we also have three kids, ages 10, 8, and 5, that we hope to send to college someday. Each of them were gifted 529 plans when they were born by their uncle that we contribute to monthly. Although I fear we don't contribute enough, we try to get 50 to 100 a month in there. But with the ever-increasingly high cost of college, I fear that it'll never be enough, even if we were to win the lottery tomorrow. So I'm just wondering what you guys think. If there will ever be anything that changes with the high cost of college, do you think anything will ever hopefully change by the time my kids get there? And what can we as parents maybe do to save a little bit more for their college so that they can not leave with 50,000 plus in debt? Thanks for everything. Love to hear what you think. Great show.
Great question, Sasha. You know, the cost of college, you're right, just through the flipping roof, OG. And as a guy who's got twins that are just about to see the finish line, it's a good day for me, but
I was gonna say you're about to do the dance.
Sasha's all, you know, looking at 10, 8, and 5, Sasha's always going to have two kids in college at one time, if I'm doing my math, if they do 4 years each, you know,
yeah.
And maybe they'll do a technical school or a trade school. We don't know. But if they do the traditional 4-year plan, she's going to have two kids in college at the same time, like I did.
A lot of times, and by the way, I'm in the exact same spot, Sasha. I have 10, 8, and 10 months. So, you know, I'll have a little gap between the middle one and the last one to get my lips above the water again before I get pushed down under.
Jump back
one
down.
Last time. But there's a lot of things that you can do. First of all, I have no prognostications as to what might happen with the rising costs of school. My guess is they will continue to rise. It's above my pay grade to try to figure out what are the causes for that or to guesstimate. I'm sure there's a lot of political causes. There's many different reasons there that are above my pay grade, like I said. But a couple of things come to mind. Firstly, there is way more scholarships available than people take advantage of. And I remember when I was going to school and when my wife was going to school, we would sit for hours at the library thumbing through the big giant book of scholarship opportunities to try to find the $500 scholarships, the $250 scholarships, the $1,000 scholarship. And individually, those things are pretty inconsequential, but collectively they can have a pretty big impact. I think it's underappreciated the usefulness of community college, especially if you're kind of unsure as to what you're going to do for work. I mean, I know when I was 18, I didn't really have any idea what I was going to do, but I still went to a 4-year university and then found myself a year later back at a community college because I couldn't justify spending $10,000 for throwing darts at a dartboard when I could do the exact same thing for $1,600 at the community college. And once I got through that for a year, then I knew, okay, this is the direction that I want to go, or these are the types of classes that I like. And of course, I have a little experience with this as well, but you know, Uncle Sam pays for a good chunk of school if you give some blood, sweat, and tears to the United States for a few minutes. Short of that, you want to make sure that from a saving standpoint that you're fully funded for your retirement. I've seen a number of times where people have slowed down, kind of let their foot off the gas on their retirement savings to put the foot on the gas of college savings, and then find out at the end of college when they're about ready to retire that they don't quite have enough. And it would be way better to overfund retirement and then help your kids out with their student loans, or the student loan payments anyway, than it would be to fully fund their college and then find out that you can't retire when you wanted to, or you've got to work an extra 4 or 5 years, in my opinion anyway. So continue focusing on your personal financial independence and retirement, and make sure that's fully funded, and use the advantages of the 529 plan, of course. But other than that, it's just going to be little one-off things.
This has been my favorite area of financial planning. When I was a financial planner, I thought this was great. I've also done interviews even since then, not just about my situation, but this is an area that I love. You know, I totally agree with OG's feeling about the rising cost of college. Not because I think it will or I think it won't go up. I think if I'm planning, I want to plan the worst case scenario, which is it's going to continue to go up aggressively, maybe at a 7% inflation rate. And you know what? If it doesn't, fantastic. But I'd much rather do that than do the opposite, that, yeah, okay, forces beyond my control are going to step in, wave the magic wand, the unicorns and rainbows are going to come out, and all of a sudden things are going to be phenomenal in my favor. I'd rather have too much money than not enough saved. So that's my thought on the right. I always want to plan as worst case scenario as I possibly can. But realize there are some things that'll make the cost of college less expensive. One that surprised me when I first became a financial planner and I saw some of my clients' kids go through college, and you've seen this too, OG, is the cost transfer. My son was the captain of the high school swim team, and you see the number of calories these people take in. Like, don't get me wrong, I can plow through a pizza pretty good, but my son, who is way smaller than I am, and probably because I wasn't captain of the swim team. I'm just talking on the microphone and he's, you know, working all the time.
Doing laps.
Yeah, yeah. But this guy ate everything. I mean, my grocery bill when Nick was here was a monster. And so when Nick and Autumn moved out at the same time, our cost for Cheryl and I at home here went through the floor. So there's some of this that some of your costs are going to be cost transfer. And a lot of people don't think about that. They're like, oh, I got to save for their room and board. Forgetting that you had room and board cost already partially at home.
Yeah.
Another piece that people forget about is private scholarships. When you talk about scholarships, most people look for scholarships their freshman year, which is when everybody looks, and then they don't look ever again. I'll tell you, we didn't get any scholarships my freshman year, except from local stuff here in Texarkana. So Autumn and Nick both got some scholarships for things they'd done, like for both of them academically and with their athletic achievements that they both had. So, but those are small, you know, 200, don't get me wrong. I love them. $250 here.
Pays for a chemistry book.
Yeah, $50 here. Nick, I think, got a $400 or $500 scholarship. So they both ended up with maybe $1,500 in local scholarships for stuff that they did in Texarkana. They didn't get anything from the school, and they got nothing from businesses. However, starting my daughter's sophomore year, Autumn started receiving scholarships from the school. So she had a great freshman year. And because of that, they started giving her journalism scholarships and university scholarships. And they paid for most of her study abroad program that she did. So a lot of the cost, if she hadn't applied for scholarships sophomore, junior, senior year. And the reason she did that was because Dad knew from talking to college planning people that, listen, nobody applies. After you don't get it freshman year, you don't apply. So she's applied every year. She's gotten money. Nick is he's in an engineering program. Dude's going to be lucky to graduate. So he didn't get those. But what's cool is this senior year, he did get one because he's done a lot of charitable stuff. Longtime listeners to the show know that my son has, he rode from Austin to Anchorage on his bicycle and is constantly doing this charitable stuff. He's going to receive a scholarship for his last semester, which will be this coming fall. which will total about $900. So,
and not Anchorage, that suburb out of Austin, outside of Austin, Anchorage,
Alaska,
the one that's 4,000 miles away in Alaska.
Kid rode his bike a long way. So
on his bicycle.
So I guess to wrap up the long winded stuff I just said, remember the cost won't be as high because of cost transfer. Number two, some of those room and board costs. Number two, remember to continue applying sophomore, junior, senior year for scholarships. Encourage your kids to work hard there. And if you want them to pay for it, this is the thing that annoys me, OG. A lot of parents say, well, my kid's going to pay for part of their college. You have to then realize, and this is what drove me crazy, is they say, my kid's going to pay for it. And then they just keep telling their kids, well, you got to pay for it. You've got to figure that out. No.
You got to help them how to do that.
Your kid has no financial education. You've got to get educated together. And starting when they're a freshman in high school, because they're not going to be able to pay for, you know, part of their college just waving a magic wand. If you're not helping them do it, nobody is. So I can't stand that. When I'm like, so what are you doing to help them? Well, they're going to figure that out. Yeah, you're lazy.
No, they won't, because they're 15.
Right. Thanks for the question, Sasha. If you've got a question, would like us to throw out the Haven Lifeline to you, that's stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And Doug just brought us down the mail. Thank you, sir. And today we have a letter from our friend Colin. And Colin says, hey, Joe and OG, love the show. Pretty general question for you guys, but maybe you'll be able to give me some insight with your basement bound expertise. Let me tell you a little bit about my situation. I'm 28 years old. My wife is 27. We make household income of approximately $135,000 per year. We have $20,000 in a cash emergency fund, an additional $55,000 in cash savings, $10,000 in our health savings account. Contributions are maxed out yearly, $28,000 in a taxable brokerage account, and $34,000 in two Roth IRAs, both maxed out yearly, $38,000 in my 457 account. That's a lot like a 401k or an RRSP if you're Canadian. We have no credit card debt, auto loans, or student loans. We've been able to pay them off. We're in the process of trying to aggressively pay off the mortgage. I despise debt. Lastly, I also have a pension through my workplace, which will be 50% of the yearly average of my three highest earning years after 25 years of service. My question to you guys, what else should I be doing? I feel like we're heading in the right direction and doing all the quote correct things. Is there something we're missing? I'd appreciate any insight or thoughts you have. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. What's funny, OG, is that I've been on the Afford Anything podcast a few times when Paula answers letters. And I think Colin wrote in there too. Colin, are you cheating on us?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I think Colin's
cheating. Maybe he didn't like your answer.
I'll ask Joe on both shows. Actually, I bet I surprised him by being over there because you don't expect me on the Afford Anything podcast. But let's talk about it. So what do you think?
It sounds like he has way too much money in cash. You said $20,000 cash reserve and $55,000 in other cash plus a brokerage account?
$55,000 in cash savings, $20,000 in cash emergency funds, $75,000 in cash when you're 28 years old.
Yeah, too much. Well, way too much. I mean, unless you got a purpose for it.
And that... when I answered maybe a similar question, maybe Colin, I shouldn't accuse you of anything. We love you, Colin, and I shouldn't accuse you of cheating without knowing. But I will say this, what I said on the Afford Anything podcast to somebody with a similar letter is the only thing I see that I don't see, I don't know how this money works together, and I don't know what it's going toward. So I don't see a plan with all this stuff. You have checked all the boxes, dude. You've checked all phenomenal boxes and you are headed into a great place. And if we do like we did a few shows ago and we do that rule of 72 OG on where he's going to end up, Colin and his spouse are going to end up in a great place. But I don't know if that $55,000 is too much cash or too little, because if he needs it next year for, let's say, a cottage down payment, great place for it, or an expensive new car, whatever it might be, phenomenal. But if it's retirement money, I'm with you.
Just because you're checking all the boxes, I mean, when it comes to the plan piece, and that's what I was going to say next, which is your goals are unique to you. So just because you say, I'm maxing out my 401k, I'm maxing out my Roth, maxing out my HSA, got money in a brokerage account, well, that's fantastic. But to what end? Like, what are we aiming for? If you're trying to retire when you're, you know, 32, you're woefully inadequate in terms of the funding. If you're trying to retire when you're 77, I'd say you're probably overfunding it and probably should be spending a little bit more money today. You know, financial planning is all about uniqueness and unique planning specific to you, not a one size fits all approach. And really this comes up from time to time. I think not very often, but you know, you're saving so much money and you're focused so much on the future that you forget to kind of look at all the stuff that you can do right now. Like there's a lot of things that you might consider doing at 28 that I assure you, you will think twice about doing when you're 48. You know, we just talked about Nick riding his bicycle for 4,000 miles. I'm not riding at 4,000, you know, anything.
Inches.
4,000 pedals. I mean, what's the smallest increment? I'd say 4,000 feet. That's still like almost a mile, you know. I'm not going to ride my bike a mile if I didn't have to at this point. Not that I'm 48, but.
Unless there's donuts on the end.
Yeah. I had like the hat with like the beer out in front of me and I'm like always pedaling after the beer is like chasing. But one of the values of having your whole life kind of centered around goal attainment and kind of when these cash flows are going to happen, you can start being comfortable about spending money. You know, a lot of times people are uncomfortable about doing it because you go, well, I'm aggressively paying off the house. Well, that's fine. That's great. If you're aggressively paying off the house, you got 55 grand in cash. Assuming that you have no purpose for that, why is that not paid? Why didn't you use it to pay off the house already? You know, why do you have $28,000 in the brokerage account? If you're aggressively paying off the house, that's $80,000. I don't know how much mortgage you have, but it doesn't strike me as somebody that's got a $900,000 mortgage at this point. So everything needs to work together toward a common purpose. And when you have that, it gives you the permission to do the other things in your life that that sometimes you just kind of default to saying no to. So
I love that idea of doing more today. I mean, more, not more saving. He's talking about what more saving should I do? You're talking about what more living should you do?
Yeah. I mean, maybe you should go to Cancun a couple times a year.
Right.
That'd be fun.
Maybe take us.
Instead of saving that extra 4,000 bucks.
Imagine how much fun Cancun with a couple podcasters would be.
Well, you know, if you've got really extra money, you know, it's not totally off the reservation to sponsor a trip, like an in-person podcasting session in like the Riviera Maya. What is that called? The Riviera Maya?
I think it's the right thing to do. Whatever it's called, it's the right thing to do. I want to throw
something
that out
about fruity drinks and
yes.
Ocean.
And if you're considering that, I can't apologize enough for accusing you of cheating on us.
Also, Joe can't apologize enough for his dad bod and the beach. the beaches in Cancun will never be the same.
The hell's a beach whale doing up here? Gotta get that thing off the beach, scaring the kids.
Everybody needs to wear their sunglasses. It's so bright out here. What's that reflecting rock over there? Just letting it breathe. Let it all hang out. When in Cancun.
Yeah. Do like the natives do, except they don't. They're like, no, senor, we don't do that.
This is darn near America. Stop.
And it totally is. If you've been to Cancun, it is it's like America Part 2.
It's like the Panama City.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have a story about that later. But thanks a ton for the question, Colin. And by the way, you're doing an awesome job. If you're just asking us.
Yeah. If you never do anything different, just don't stop what you're currently doing.
Yeah.
You can do a lot worse things.
If you've got a question for the mailbag, you know, when I said the last show that we were catching up, I'm going to define that. We're about 6 weeks behind. So if you heard me on Monday say that we're getting there, we're 6 weeks out. So, and with the Haven Lifeline now, we're running about 3 weeks ahead. So thanks to everybody for writing in and for your questions. You got a question for us, though. Feel free to write to us. The easiest way, head to stackybenjamins.com. There is a tab on the top of our website that says question for the show, and you'll see the Haven Lifeline right there. After you click that tab, you'll also see the letters box, and you can do it there or just email me, joe@stackybenjamins.com. If you're looking for better financial planning in your corner, looking for a coach to help you with your money, OG's taking clients. Head to stackybenjamins.com/OG to get on his calendar. It's very easy to set that up, and then you can have a discussion with OG in private about what it takes to get him working on your team. Man, Marcy Keckler, I just love it when somebody from the company I used to work with comes on and knocks the ball out of the park, OG. It was great. By the way, it was Minnesota Day. Sasha from Minnesota, Marcy from Minnesota. And not very much of a, hey, okay, they're hosers. Yeah, right.
I like Minneapolis. It's a nice town. Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Just a beautiful area. Just a
great town. Even in the wintertime, it's real pretty, especially you get those little little tunnels there. You can kind of, you don't ever have to go outside. You can like look at the outside and still be like 72 degrees.
I was there for an American Express meeting and it was in January and it was negative five. And I'm going through all those tunnels from place to place. Like we went to a nice dinner together after the conference was over. And we went, you know, we just went everywhere and you never had to go outside in that stuff. I remember I did have to go outside for something one time. And I'm like, what the heck is this? I want those passageways back. Mm-hmm. Really cool. It's like that in Toronto, too. Have you been to Toronto?
I've been to Toronto, but not recently.
Yeah, because they go down, you know, theirs are tunnels below the city. A little bit in Chicago, but not so much. That's going to do for you this week, OG. Hey, I said that we would say thank you to people who've left us reviews because that's how new listeners find the show. So thank you to everybody who's done that. Going up on Mom's Fridge this week, Jay Slaughter 141 gave us 5 stars, says awesome podcast, The Real Pros. Don't know about that, Jay Slaughter, but thank you for saying it. He says best intros, real advice, and the OG is cool.
As the other side of the pillow, baby.
You'll have to agree with that. And then Amon B 014, 5 stars, and says, I learned nothing. Perfect. Fantastic review, says, this is a great show, even though I learned absolutely nothing. Thanks for that. My favorite voices play to and from college. I'm only 22 years old, but this show makes finance actually interesting. I came from the Money Tree podcast, which is another great one. Of course, OG, I'm one of 4 contributors on that show, which comes out once a week. Former Ramsey listener, but this podcast focuses much more on wealth rather than debt freedom. Great show. I'm glad that I'm glad that they could figure out what the show focuses on because... Do we focus on wealth? I think we focus on...
It makes us sound more important.
It really does. I think we focus on...
I am the co-host of a wealth podcast. Yes. Brought to you from the exquisite, luxurious accommodations here in Joe's mom's basement.
We don't say mom's basement, though. We say the luxurious accommodations in the suite below mom's house.
There you go.
Yes.
The office. In the first floor. Right. It's like Super Mario World, like the negative one world. Remember that back in the day? Like this is like negative one world.
All right, everybody. Go Stacks and Benjamins. We'll see you on Friday back here with our roundtable and our FreshBooks FinTech segment. All right, Doug, take it from here. What should we have learned today?
Well, everyone, what did you learn today? Probably nothing, but I'll take a stab at this. First, the key to financial success, if you're planning with someone else, maybe it isn't the right spreadsheet or cool asset allocation tools. Marcy Keckler really nailed it. The key is communication. Second, Jamie Wise says the crowds continue to work ahead of the curve. Should that change your asset allocation? Maybe not, but at the very least, knowing what's on the horizon will give you an idea of the bumps coming down the road. But the big lesson, don't start planning your own spin-off podcast until you bought equipment. I never knew this, but you need a lot of specialized stuff to do this job. OG was telling me that the must-have pieces of equipment include something called Bailey's and a earplug so you can't hear what Joe says and probably even your very own waffle maker. That's a lot of money to spend just to get to first base. I may have to rethink this podcasting thing. Special thanks to Marcy Keckler from Ameriprise for joining us today. For more on the Ameriprise study on family communication, head to Ameriprise.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to Joe's mom for the cookies and milk during the middle part of the show today. Nothing says manly man podcasting with middle-aged dudes like cookies and milk.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show. It's a little like Fight Club. You don't talk about it, right? If you have to, we made a compromise with people because too many people are talking about it anyway. Just talk about
they
dessert.
Still do it on the Facebook page. Somebody did just a couple days ago or a week ago. Somebody's like, I love the after show.
Yeah, I think in the green room, that's a different area because that's our little closed area. But you shouldn't talk about
still,
it.
You got to practice good manners everywhere.
That is very true.
If you bring it up there, it's going to slip out at a dinner party.
And then the whole thing goes away.
And then the whole world knows.
And then no dessert for anybody.
So you have a tale as old as time.
I have that in just a second. I want to tell this Cancun story here for a second because I promised that. So when we were in Cancun, we had friends that wanted to go see the bullfight. Have you ever seen a bullfight?
Just on National Geographic.
In Cancun, they kill the bull. In Spain, I believe Spain or Portugal, they don't kill the bull. I don't have that in front of me. But anyway, the bull dies.
It looks pretty miserable for the bull.
Basically, what happens is the matador goes, there's two matadors, first two guys, and I know they have names. I don't profess to know anything about bullfighting.
You're not in the bull circle.
All I know is there's a bull ring. First guy comes out, he's got his little red blanket, right? The bull goes to the blanket and he ducks out of the way. But not only does he duck out of the way, he has a little spear and he puts the spear in the side of the bull.
Yeah.
And then the next guy comes out, he does a couple things too. You know, the bull charges him and he gets out of the way with his blankie and then he puts a spear in the side of the bull. So by the time the main dude comes out, bull's bleeding on both sides and bull's about to have some heart failure from a loss of blood. But the main matador...
This is disgusting, but go ahead.
Yeah, the main matador goes through a few times and a little longer, and he's putting spears in the side of him, and the bull's bleeding all over. And it gets really quiet as the bull, like, backs up, and the bull's kind of wavering, right? And this woman, it is clearly an American, across the ring. Like, everybody in the place just realized. If they didn't know before, we're just watching this bull slowly die over the course of probably 45 minutes.
And nice. That's what a fun experience.
Yeah. And so it gets super quiet.
Like, steak anybody?
Literally, you could hear a pin drop. And this woman way across the way from me goes, "Don't kill him." And the whole place starts laughing. We're like, "Oh, honey, he's dead any second." And literally, the bull starts charging toward him right after that and just collapses on the ground halfway to him. And
bull's, great story. Yeah. That's a fantastic.
Bull's done. I would not recommend that to anybody. I come from a family of hunters. I've gone deer hunting. I've gone, you know.
But there's a respectful way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Humane way to go deer hunting.
Yeah. And we ate what we killed.
You don't shoot the legs out of the bunnies one at a time. One leg
at a time while it's alive. Yeah.
And then laugh at it while it can't hop anymore.
And charge all 12 of my friends to watch me do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was gruesome and I don't recommend it. But anyway, something I do have a tale as old as time. Cheryl and I, when we were in Tulsa, we went on Saturday a couple weeks ago between the first game that Michigan State just did great and the second game where they not so much against a pretty good team in Kansas. We had some time to kill, so we went to see this tale as old as time called Beauty and the Beast.
My dear Belle, you're so ahead of your time. This is a small village.
You are the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. Nobody deserves you.
And it's small-minded as well. But small also means safe.
I've come for my father.
He's a thief.
Come into the light. I will escape, I promise.
Look, a girl.
Who said that?
Hello.
You can talk.
Hello, pause. It's all
the
Evan.
I think everybody knows the story from there, right? If you haven't seen Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, not the original version of the tale. Obviously, this is a tale that has been told a bajillion times in a lot of different ways. This, obviously being a Disney remake, borrows heavily from the animated version, but also borrows from other versions as well to make it different. And the big question that people have had is, so is it better? Is it worse? Is it worth going to see? Critics seem to be a little bit split on it. The Rotten Tomato score is a 70, which is generally good, but not great. First of all, I think OG, if you're comparing this one with the animated version. I think you're doing it wrong. I didn't see any. I can't compare them because there was so much difference between them. I thought this movie was really well done. Thought Emma Thompson did a great job in her role as Belle. I was very surprised to see Kevin. I don't remember the last time I saw Kevin Kline in a movie.
Huh? Yeah, I can't think of one.
I know Kevin Kline plays her father, and then the Beast is Dan Stevens. And if you watch Downton Abbey, you'll know Dan Stevens is a character, Matthew, who played a huge part, had a huge role. And it's kind of funny that Dan Stevens is in this because the woman who played Rose played the main role as Cinderella in last year's live action version of Cinderella. So this is the latest in Disney's, you know, let's take the animated movies and let's make them real life. Also, a guy who's in every movie ever, I swear, is Stanley Tucci. You just can't get away from Stanley Tucci. That dude is in every stinking movie. If you don't know who Stanley Tucci is, just go look him up and you're going to laugh because this dude is in everything. That guy must, you know how Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, is the highest paid actor now in, as far as I know, he was last I saw maybe 3 months ago, the highest paid actor in Hollywood. Stanley Tucci's got to be up there, not because of each piece of work making a lot of money, because this dude must be the hardest working guy in Hollywood. So star-studded lineup. I really liked it. You know, I mean, I'm a Disney dude. This movie I liked originally. I like the story. I think it's pretty funny. I think Gaston's pretty funny. That whole barroom scene with, you know, nobody's as ripped as Gaston. I use antlers in all of my decorating. Might be my favorite, my favorite Gaston line. Not much to say here.
It hits close to home when he says that, huh?
If you, that's right. It's totally what we do in the basement. If you didn't like the animated Beauty and the Beast, if that's not on your radar, you're not going to like this one. If you like the first one, you're probably going to like this. And by the way, the negative stuff that the critics give this one, I think it's from critics that think it's fashionable to rip a live action version of this movie. Cause I can't imagine. I've read the reviews that are negative and I'm like, yeah, I don't see it. Like a lot of times I'll read the negative reviews and I'm like, yeah, I totally agree. I just don't see it. And I don't think that's cause I'm a Disney homer. I think it's just fashionable to rip it, you know? Okay. I don't like Beauty and the Beast. I don't like the fact Disney did it. So I'm going to rip this thing. Good for you. You did it. So you already know before my review whether you're going to like it or not. OG, probably not on your radar.
Oh, I'll see Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Not at the theater.
See, that surprises me.
But I got kids, you know, so, you know, if, as a matter of fact, we just watched the DVD version not two weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, just that we've got all the Disney DVDs and we kind of scroll through them. And sometimes we watch, you know, Zootopia, the newest one, or, you know, Big Hero 6 or something like that. And then sometimes we go to the vault and go, hey, we haven't seen Fox and the Hound in forever. Let's whip out a little
Big Hero Six.
Little Fox and Hound.
Big Hero Six. So good.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
That's a movie I think people are going to forget later on. And, you know, you look at the numbers on that movie versus other movies. Pretty good numbers, but not phenomenal like Zootopia. And Big Hero Six is just so good. Zootopia is amazing too. Good stuff. Anyway, Beauty and the Beast, thumb up from me. Big thumb up from Cheryl. You know, we went to one of those AMC theaters where it's assigned seating.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of assigned seating. It was fine. Well, you know, we got there at the last minute. Most people around us got their seats ahead of time. So I like the fact that it guarantees you can sit together if you're early. So I like that. But still, it's annoying at the last minute. Cheryl sat behind me. You know, I could have gotten tickets the day before, but I didn't know Michigan State was going to play another day. And I could have waited for Texarkana. But what I did like about the AMC theater was they had those reclining seats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are special, aren't they?
Dude, that's dangerous for a 48-year-old man.
Like, I know. Well, that's what I think, too. When I take the kids there, my favorite story about going to the AMC theater, because we've got one that's kind of near us. It's like a little bit longer of a drive, but we'll do that for special movies. You know, I've got the 3 tickets or 4 tickets. We're taking the family, whatever it is. And, you know, I bought mine on the app, right? So I tag J1234 or whatever it is. And I get there and somebody's sitting in the seats, right? And I'm like, oh, hey, I think you might be, you know, this is J. Maybe you're in K or L or I. I don't know. But anyway, these are mine. So get the bleep out of here, right? And the guy's like, oh, sorry about that. And he gets up and he moves. He's like, oh, I think I just might have moved, you know, one too many over, right? Which ones are yours? And I point him out. He goes, oh, yeah, okay. So he hops to the end of where his family is. And I'm thinking, oh, well, he just looked at the seat numbers wrong, right? Next group comes in. Same conversation with those 4 people,
oh,
right?
No.
Hey, I think you're in the wrong seats. He goes, oh, okay. Yeah, sorry about that. He gets up. He goes up to the next row. Same conversation. Goes down a couple rows. Same conversation. He's and then finally he left. And I'm like, you should have figured it out after the second time, dude. Like, they're assigned seats. It's not like you can just, you know, it'd be better to wait 20 minutes into the movie and then come
and
in.
Then go in. Right.
And then just kind of pick a spot, you know.
Yeah, because the fourth time you did that, we realized that you probably don't belong here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might not.
Jack wagon.
Awesome. We have friends though in town here that do that. I can't do that.
That's special.
That's
good. That's good life lesson for your kids. Let's show them how to steal little things.
Right.
I'm gonna stay here, Junior. We can get a free pack of M&Ms if we shove it in our pants, and then we don't have to pay the outrageous cost. It's like all of that's true, but it would just be better just to not bring in your own. Just go. No, we're not gonna buy it because it's too expensive.
We're not gonna
bring it either.
We'll just wait till later.
Yeah, it's an hour and 45 minutes. Surely you are not so hungry as you must eat every hour and 40 minutes. Right. You know.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.